Scheduled coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to have Walter Burian on to talk about the biggest game in town, one of the biggest scams in the world, not just in this country. And frankly, you're not going to hear this anywhere else. We're going to be talking about the comprehensive annual financial reports. I actually have the comprehensive annual financial report from 1999. And this is from the Comptroller's Office, Carol Keaton Rylander, Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts. And this is a scaled-down comprehensive financial report. It's only 295 pages long, phone book size, though, compared to what it was in 1998. And you've seen us on the air with the 1998 comprehensive annual financial report. I tore apart the file room at my office today, dug through 20 boxes and couldn't find it, but in later shows we will have that. And you can go to the state free of charge and get 99, 98, 97, 96, going back 20-plus years, free of charge. They will give those to you. But never in the media, never in the press, will you hear about the comprehensive annual financial report. 99's, 2000 isn't out yet, comes out a few months after the fiscal year ends, which is back in October, but it's still not out yet. They have the Capitol and the nice, you know, fireworks going off above it. The year before that, it has the Guadalupe Mountains and cactuses and, you know, pretty shot. No expense is spared. This comprehensive annual financial report is not as lavish as the previous comprehensive financial reports, and it does not give all of the numbers. And that is because of the pressure of myself and hundreds of other Americans in the media, in the alternative press, Access TV, syndicated talk radio that is not yet controlled in many cases, reporting on this. You're saying, Alex, you're talking about a comprehensive annual financial report. I'm about to change the channel. Boring taxes. We know government's corrupt. We know they're pulling all kinds of scams on us. What are you talking about? Why should we care about this? Because it's the biggest game in town, folks. This is why your police are now wearing black ski masks. This is why they're getting armored personnel carriers. This is why cameras are going up. This is why they've put up microphones all over Austin, Texas, to little or no fanfare. This is why we're being wired for sound. This is why our driver's licenses have a digital thumbprint on them. This is why we're losing national sovereignty. Because, ladies and gentlemen, the comprehensive annual financial reports in states, counties, cities, water districts, school districts especially, all have these. And if you type in CAFR, or type all the way out, comprehensive annual financial report, into a search engine, you will see thousands of links to counties, to cities, to states, and to the federal government bragging, going back over years. Stuff going back to probably 1990 is on the web. The federal government has a whole website on this, openly admitting this galactic-sized fraud we're about to expose yet again here on the air. Now, hold on to your hat, ladies and gentlemen. Strap yourselves in for what I'm about to tell you. And this is 100% proven from the state's own numbers, the county, the city, the feds, you name it. Let me give you an analogy to bring this down to earth. Let's say, hypothetically, I make $100 a week. Alex Jones makes $100 a week, hypothetically. But I tell my family, my wife and children, which I don't have, but again, it's a hypothetical example. I tell my wife and children that our budget, that we've got to stay on budget, that I only have on budget $2 a week. Now, I talk to my family. They see me doing bills. I put out a report on our finances every month. My wife reads it and looks at it. Absolutely amazing. She is thinking that we only have $2 a week to operate on, and I go over in a week. I spend $3. We're a dollar on our budget in a deficit. We're a dollar in the hole. What are we going to do about it? How can we stop this? We're in deep trouble. Honey, you're going to have to get a second job. I'm going to have to get a second job to pay for this. Now, I could have used $1,000 a week and said it was, you know, I told my family that I have, you know, $50. I'm using $100 because it's an easy number to understand. That's what government does. I didn't tell her about the 98. She doesn't know where I'm banking it, where I'm investing it, where I'm blowing it, what I'm doing with it. All she knows about is my budget that is $2 a week, and then I've gone over and I'm in a deficit. And to pay off that extra dollar a week we're spending, because our budget's $2 and we spent $3, because she doesn't know about the other $98 that I really made that week, she's going to have to go out and get another job to pay off that debt. This is what the state of Texas, that Travis County, that Austin, Texas does. In 1998, in the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, the state of Texas had a $435 billion surplus. A $435 billion surplus. It was right there on page 8, on page 7, on page 6, just like the 1999 version. Right there in their own report, ladies and gentlemen. Right there in their own report for the whole world to see. Every major media outlet gets a copy of this. They print up hundreds of thousands of them for the state of Texas. You pay for it. It goes out to all the major bond houses, all the major mutual funds, all the major companies like Xerox and Ford and you name it, Monsanto's. They all get it. This is the stuff that city managers and county managers and the financial directors talk about. This is the stuff they live, the stuff they breathe. They had $435 billion in Texas in surplus. And by surplus, I mean the Roman Empire had had a million slaves at one time, but did they have a surplus? No, they always wanted more. A wino's got two bottles of whiskey, but is that a surplus? No, he always wants more. The point is, these aren't even surpluses to them. They want more. So back in 98, remember Bush was having the big fight with the Democrats on the surface over the $6.9 billion surplus. We had this huge surplus. Bush was bragging, look how conservative, fiscally conservative we've been. We have this surplus. And there was this big phony fight. They finally decided to give back Texans $2.2 billion in sales tax cuts. Okay? This is what they did. I mean, folks, this is so simple, it's hard to explain. So they were telling you about a $6.9 billion surplus, extra money, and then had a big fight over where it should be spent or if it should be given back to you, when they really had $435 billion that was profits on investments. And we're going to have Walter Burian on a little bit later. We're going to go into great detail on this. It's one of the biggest secrets around, just like the Federal Reserve, being private, having private stockholders, and being run for profit. There are no reserves. You can't audit it. It's just there, printing the money, ordering the Federal Treasury to do so. This is the scam. This is the biggest game in town. This is how they're running the whole ball of wax. This is how they're ruling over us. And the big news is, get ready for this, that they own over half the stock market, that is state, county, city, and the federal government. That they own 70-plus percent of Xerox, using an example, 80% plus of Ford. This is years-old numbers. They own the majority of every publicly traded company of any size. They own almost all of the stock in the Dow Industrial 30, the top 30 stocks. They own most of the NASDAQ. They own a large portion of privately held companies, like Dell. They own a large portion of the stock that Gates hasn't turned loose of in Microsoft, in Intel. Motorola is almost completely owned by the government. This is the definition of organized crime. But yet they sell you at the city level when the city of Austin has billions of dollars of surplus. Capital Metro does. They're pulling in billions every year. They tell you, you got to have a tax increase or the schools are going to close. We got to have a tax increase or the potholes won't get filled. We got to have a tax increase or there won't be emergency radios in the fire trucks and EMS, in the ambulances. A patent, erroneous lie. Now you understand why government is so-called privatizing utilities and privatizing hospitals and privatizing roads and privatizing everything. Because they already own it all. Any sector they start privatizing means they own over half of it. Like when you hear out in California, the big power crunch, whether it's because of privatization, the cities and counties in the state own 80%. That was even in the Associated Press today, of those power plants. Now, wait a minute. Before so-called privatization, it was actually privately held predominantly. Up is down is up, black is white is black. I want you to think about the magnitude of this. Because when they tell you that you've got to pay more taxes because of the deficit on the budget, that's like if I made $100 a week and I told my wife, our budget is $2. And that's all she knew about. She didn't know about the other $98 I'm making a week. All she knew about was the $2. We go over that budget of $2, she's going to have to get a second job because she believes that we're in the hole. When in truth, I'm investing and saving or blowing $98 a week, and she doesn't even know about it, because in the economic world today, everything is budgets. Take the federal government, $34 trillion surplus. You count state and local and water districts and schools in surpluses, that is in liquid cash each year, profit off of investments. Profit off of investments. $60+ trillion, federal, state, local. Because the budget is the money they have coming in to pay the actual services. We'll take a state like New Jersey in 1989. $17 billion in bills and services and lighting and power for the government buildings, for the roads, for everything. They made $80+ billion in profits on investments. So you had $60+ billion being reinvested. It's an endless cycle. Within another 5 years, the government will own all of the stock that you do not privately hold, and what the people hold is going to be such incredible peanuts compared to it, it won't even count. Now, how many of you knew that big companies, when they have stockholder meetings, have city managers and portfolio managers and folks from the National Association of Counties and Cities and Governors there as the top people in that hall with that CEO up there? How many of you knew that people from Travis County, top officials, travel the country weekly to New York and Boston and Los Angeles and even here in Austin to go to these stockholder meetings and to see how their stock is doing? How many of you knew that? And here's the really big bombshell. How many of you knew that with the $60+ trillion surplus that is going on right now with state, federal, and local, that you could have all the government services that are here, expand them according to population, expand them taking inflation into account? You have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, that we would never have to pay taxes again, never pay taxes again, and that we would get a yearly or monthly, depending on how we wanted it, annuity check in the tens of thousands of dollars yearly. Now, you don't believe that? Alaska does it. Alaska has a system close to what we're talking about. And their people this year got $3,000. And that's just a small bit of what the oil and gas revenue is that the state takes in. And the people don't even pay taxes in Alaska. 1 million people live in Alaska, and they're not even paying taxes, and they're getting paid by the government. And that's not welfare, folks. That's not you can't have a man in the house, and we're going to break up your family, and you got to put your kids on Ritalin and Prozac, and then we'll give you enough to barely live in a run-down rat hole that the government operates. We're talking about money coming directly to you. We're talking about never paying taxes again, phasing taxation out in 3 years. What is the alternative? The alternative is to allow state, local, and federal governments, school districts, water districts like the LCRA, building their giant complexes everywhere, to continue to take your tax money and invest it in the stock market, buy actual companies, start their own businesses. I mean, think about this, and they'll run everything. They already basically do. Think about the magnitude of that. They're telling you, you got to dig deep and tighten your belt to pay off the deficit, the federal deficit, when the feds have 30-plus trillion dollars in absolute cream off global investments. Forget the bills, things that they're slated they have to pay off in the future. All that's on the budget. They put all the losses, all the expenses on budget, and then tell you about the budget and never talk about the comprehensive annual financial reports and what their actual cash gross annual receipts are from turnpikes and sales taxes and fines and fees and regulatory payments and all of this and port authorities. The list goes on and on. Walter Burian was at the highest levels running a large company in the World Trade Center, doing all of this stuff 10 years ago when he found out about it. When he found out, he's going to tell you the story. And I didn't believe Walter Burian 2 years ago when I found out about this. He's on the air saying, Texas in 98, let's use your state, Alex. He goes, I'm on the computer right now on the government's own website. You can all check it out yourself. It was $435 billion. I'm like, Walter, that's not true. So what happens? Max, who's in the control room right now, goes down. Where'd you go, the state attorney general's office? And he gets the 98 comprehensive annual financial report. This is the 99. And there it is on page 6, 435. The comptroller's office, $435 billion surplus. And we're reading in the newspaper every single day. We're seeing it in the paper every day that there was a $6.9 billion surplus, and there was a big fight over if we were going to get any of it back, and we got $2 billion back. So we got $2 billion back. They told us it was $6.9 billion surplus when it was really $435 billion. The city of Manhattan, ladies and gentlemen, in 1989, with their own numbers, and I've seen them, had $1.2 trillion in cream surplus off the top. Not the stuff that had to stay in investments, not the paying for the schools or the buildings or leases or fines or fees or new equipment or paying employees. That's all a little bitty budget over here. Tens of billions of dollars for Manhattan. But trillions of just cream. No wonder the cops are wearing black ski masks. No wonder there's armored personnel carriers driving around. No wonder they're building prisons everywhere. We're basically their slaves, ladies and gentlemen. Trying to inform people, we're talking about the biggest game in town with the man that did the equivalent of proving the world was round, like Galileo. It's something so huge, so monolithic, documented by the states, by the counties, by the cities, but no one in the press, no one in the media will talk about it. Governments are running gigantic surpluses. They're buying up everything, most of the industries. We already used the example of Xerox and Ford. It's a total takeover. They're building their own little empires. I give you Walter Burian, and now a lot of folks are out there copying his work, and that's great. Former guy that did all the accounting for the Air Force and their investigations in accounting is now out there calling himself Capperman, Capperman.com. A lot of folks are coming forward on this, but this is the person that did it. And he did 2 hours with me on the radio today, and now he's joining us again for this Access television show. And I appreciate the Walter Burian doing this. This is the only place you'll see this type of information, ladies and gentlemen. Walter, good to talk to you.
Good evening, Alex.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Joining us from your home out in Arizona. I want you to take a couple minutes out and just tell folks about Walter Burian, how Walter Burian found out about the biggest game in town, and who really runs this planet, and then later, solutions to stop it. It's pretty exciting stuff.
All right, going back about 10 years ago, I stumbled across the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. I was a commodity trading advisor, one of the first tenants of the World Trade Center back in 1978. Did a national news line coast to coast on commodities. Back in 1990, there was a governor who got elected by the name of Jim Florio in New Jersey. And he got elected on a no-new tax platform. As soon as he got into office, $2.8 billion tax increase, the largest in the state's history. Well, the public was not pleased. And one of the local radio stations, 101.5 FM, two DJs, John and Ken, started doing rabble-rousing, taking calls from listeners on examples of waste and misspending. I was listening on the first 2 days, and I heard people calling in on examples of $5,000, $15,000. The highest figure I heard was $85,000. And I pulled out the budget report, looked at the billions of dollars that the state was dealing with, called into the radio program, and I said, come on, guys, you're missing the whole point. The state is dealing with billions of dollars. If there's fraud, waste, and misspending taking place, it's taking place on tunes of tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
And that was using the budget, where they try to give us tunnel vision to just look at the budget. That's what brought you into the comprehensive annual financial report. You started doing a little bit of your own rabble-rousing when John and Ken challenged you, didn't they?
Correct. They challenged us to start an organization to repeal the tax increase. 10 of us got together. I incorporated a group called Hands Across New Jersey. With the help of John and Ken, rabble-rousing 24 hours a day around the clock, we had our first rally down in Trenton, New Jersey. People converged from all the shore points in New Jersey. We had caravans heading to Trenton. 115,000 people converged on Trenton and shut the city down. But in the interim, I said I better start looking at the revenue, budget, and finance. Being that I was a commodity trading advisor, large numbers did not bother me. $1 in a billion, it's just a number. And I started looking at the budget report, and I noticed that all of the cash cow generators of state government, New Jersey Turnpike, Garden State Parkway, Port Authority of New York, New Jersey, no revenue shown on the budget report. I didn't see any large return from investment funds on the budget report. And I said, they have to have a two-tier accounting structure here because I'm not seeing the complete picture. Now, the director of the budget, his name was Richard Keevy. He was on vacation until the following Tuesday of that week. I called his lower assistant, and the conversation went just like this. Hi, this is Walter Burian. I'm working on a report for Richard. I have to have it done by Tuesday when he gets back from vacation. I need all the figures on the autonomous agency accounts, interest accounts, investment accounts. And he goes, oh, you want the comprehensive annual financial report. Bing, first time I heard that before. He goes, yeah, can you send me a copy? He goes, well, I don't know. You better speak to Mark, the next one down from Richard. I called Mark up. Hi, Mark, this is Walter Burian. I just spoke to Jim. I'm working on a report for Richard. I have to have it done by Tuesday when he gets back. I need the comprehensive annual financial report sent to me right away. Got it that Friday. Being a bottom-line type person, I wanted to see what the totals were. Now, on liquid assets, investment assets for the state, in the comprehensive annual financial report, it was standing at about $188 billion. Now, I start looking for the total cash gross receipts, the number one question IRS asked in an audit. Found it on page 174 under cash additions, all agencies, all departments, all sources. Here's a state with a declared service budget of $17 billion that was bringing in $86,799,000,000 in cash for the year. I learned the definition of syndicated organized crime right there on the spot and the principle of operation. The principle of operation was anything that was a cost and an expense, they left under the budgetary basis, and the public footed 100% of the bill for 100% of the services. Anything that was a profit center had the ability of being a profit center, large investment fund that generated substantial revenue, totally restricted by statute for no tie or inclusion whatsoever with a budgetary basis. And in New Jersey's case, they were bringing in $69 billion a year over what they were bringing in on the budgetary basis through taxation, fines, and fees.
And for the layperson out there, boil that down for them. The difference between the budget and the real set of books, the comprehensive annual financial reports.
Well, up until this point and making this discovery, I always heard budget report, budget report, budget. We have a shortfall of budgetary revenue. We have to increase taxes. our budget is, you know, for the school, for the police. We have to increase taxes. And the budget report is strictly the annual operating costs for that year, what they're bringing in, what they're supposed to be spending. It does not mention the total investments, it doesn't mention the total income, and it doesn't mention the total net worth. Just as yourself, Alex, if you're making $100,000 a year and your budget for operating your house was $30,000 a year, you could audit your $30,000 budget 100 times over, count for a nickel, dime, and penny. If you spent $29,000 this year on your budget, you'd have a $1,000 surplus. If you spent $31,000 on your budget for operating your house, you'd have a $1,000 deficit under your budget.
And there's no discussion of the other $70,000.
Correct. And also no discussion of your $1.5 million net worth that you've been building up over the decades. Never a mention. There are three words that a politician or the news media will not mention, basic words or expressions. The first one is, what is the total income? Gross receipts. Number two, what are the total investments? Number three, what is the net worth? And there's actually a fourth, which is very important. What is the growth? What has the growth been in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 25 years?
Agent Joe Bannister. In the last 2 years, Mr. Bannister has gone public on national television, in the newspapers, you name it, about how the IRS is a collection agency for the private, run-for-profit Federal Reserve that's, well, running this whole comprehensive annual financial report scam that we've just exposed. Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, more and more Americans are fighting this and coming out against the developments. It's time for you to join the team. Many hands make light work. The IRS is a criminal organization. The 16th Amendment was never ratified to give you the income tax. You pay your taxes to the private banks. It's called the New World Order. And now they want a THX 1138 you. That is dumb you down 110%.
Well, we're here in Northern California. And a few weeks ago, on my radio program, we talked to Joe Bannister. In fact, his story's starting to get a lot of attention. There's going to be an article in Media Bypass. He's been doing a lot of radio interviews with people that are interested in the truth of what's really happening. He also has a website that contains the letter that he wrote to the IRS commissioner, Charles Rossetti. And again, his name is Joe Bannister, and he was a special treasury agent assigned to the IRS to investigate people that were filing fraudulent tax returns or simply hiding assets. And thanks a lot for spending some time with us, Mr. Bannister. God bless. Basically, just start out and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you stumbled upon the truth.
Well, I started out as a CPA. I worked in public accounting, and I decided that I wanted a little more excitement, and I decided to become a law enforcement officer in federal government.
Yeah.
Well, the Internal Revenue Service is... his job is to collect income taxes and some excise taxes. And the Criminal Investigation Division, of which I was a part, investigates criminal violations of those tax laws.
And when did you start to, tell us how it all began. What made you first want to investigate the Internal Revenue Code yourself and not just take the manuals and the codes that you used when investigating tax evaders?
Well, in December of 1996, I was listening to the radio here in the Bay Area, and I heard a lady named D.V. Kidd come on the radio, and she started saying some very unbelievable things, like the income tax was voluntary, that the 16th Amendment was never ratified, and that that federal income taxes don't go towards providing revenue for the U.S. government. And I thought those claims were awfully outrageous, but she was talking about it on a radio show hosted by a man who I trusted, and that made me want to dig deeper and see what it was she was saying and what evidence she had to back it up.
Absolutely. And so, yeah, 1996 you started investigating. How long did you investigate before you came to your conclusions?
A little over 2 years. So I basically, my investigation ended right about the time I was forced to resign.
OK. Can you tell us that story and also get into some of the things that you uncovered that are historic?
Well, I'd say after a good year, year and a half, I basically in my mind came to the realization that her claims were correct, that in fact the income tax was voluntary, although it sounds kind of strange to be saying that because we all know that people go to prison, they lose their homes, they have their wages garnished. But the reason that the IRS constantly refers to the income tax as being voluntary is because of our U.S. Constitution and the severe limitations that are placed on the federal government's ability to tax us. So,
there are only certain forms of constitutional taxation.
That's correct. That our income taxes do not, provide revenue as I always believed they did. It's more like a cash advance type system where the federal government borrows fiat money from the Federal Reserve, and then our income taxes are used as a vehicle to pay interest on that debt. Well, the printing of the money, another thing that I found out, which totally surprised me, was that they print the money, and there's no value to it, and they, in a sense, print it and out of nothing. They make it out of nothing, simply because they have the power to force us to use the currency.
And it's kind of like a rat in a maze. And we never question the maze itself, never think outside the box. And that's why you're rare, well, more and more people are, in government standing up, this is becoming more and more clear, but it's still rare in the IRS, Mr. Bannister, for somebody to actually pull back and see this. What was it like, let's say, a year into your studies? Because you said you studied for about 2 years before you finally made your decision with the evidence. What was it like about a year into it?
It was very difficult because I took the job thinking that I could use my financial skills to fight crime, go after the bad guys, and I did. Money launderers, drug smugglers. One particular case was even featured on America's Most Wanted, so I was really enjoying myself. So it really it shook my belief system to its very foundations, and it was really very difficult for me to continue doing the job and excelling at it because my mental state was difficult, to go to work every day, even though I wasn't daily, arresting tax evaders or people that didn't file tax returns. I wasn't personally doing that, but I still just felt it was very difficult to just go through the day-to-day process of the job knowing what I was finding out and not
because you found out that you were putting people in jail for something that the very system itself was doing.
At least the agency as a whole was doing that, and I felt that sooner or later I needed to start speaking out publicly because I felt, clearly the tax can only be voluntary or mandatory, and if it is voluntary, then it is wrong and illegal to prosecute, harass, seize money from people who don't volunteer.
Where does the money go? They throw this fiat money out there. We take the money up, and correct me if I'm wrong, we put labor into it, we work to attain it, and thus they steal our labor.
In a sense, that's correct. I mean, for quite some time, I'd hear D.D. Kidd talking about the Federal Reserve and how we're slaves, and I didn't really understand what she meant. But when you really spend a little time and educate yourself on the way the process works, it's really very simple economics, and I don't have an economics degree or anything like that, but you can eventually see that when the source of the money supply is a bank and the destination of the money supply is a bank
and the controller of the money supply is a bank and the interest rates, that's a total complete monopoly. It's a money trust.
You basically have you can't get out of the slavery. You can't get out of the constantly increasing supply of money, which is another thing I noticed and never really thought about, is that although they constantly will tell you that we're trying to keep inflation under control, we're trying to minimize the effects of it, if you look at it over a period of decades, it's always going up. It never goes down or disappears. It's basically on an upward tilt forever and ever and ever. The economics of it, eventually, it ends up destroying the economy and the people in it.
And you have to ask yourself, why would this global system want to do that? It's just all about power. It's modern colonialism.
Well, again, it's economic slavery, and it's such a something that it took me till the age of 35 to go out and do my own personal investigation to understand how it works. I never learned it at the university, didn't learn it on the CPA exam, didn't learn it in the Big 8 accounting firm, and certainly didn't learn it at the IRS.
That's right. You went to one of the biggest and best accounting schools.
Well, I worked 3 years at KPMG Pete Marlick, but I never was taught. I had to go out and learn it on my own, and luckily D.V. Kidd was on a radio station that I gave some credibility to. If I had heard her just on a street corner or at a meeting somewhere, I probably would have just kept on walking.
I mean, just basically, is there anything you want to say to the people in Austin, Texas, Central Texas, the people that tape this show and send it out to friends and family as well?
I guess the only thing I would say is I've seen evidence of an orchestrated campaign of painting a broad brush over people like Alex who really are telling you the truth. And I was one of those people that thought these were all kooky ideas, but I've come to realize that they are very true and very serious. And I'm very afraid for my own family, our own Americans' ability to make a living, to have a country that has a manufacturing base, to have a future. Our country is close to being destroyed economically through the banking and monetary system. And it's about time that people realize that they're being lied to, and they should start listening to people like Alex, because he is telling you the truth.